happened. It's my fault.
Little fool. To no northern of palace. Here you are. Drawing. We have one day before the Vikings attack Kells.
We must
run from here. The gate will hold.
We will need to be refugees into your chapel. There's some comfort there to the attack of the time.
Tell the villagers to stay in their huts.
Calla.
You'll be safe in here with your precious book.
Thank you.
and foragers. The frontier was everywhere. We were bounded only by the earth and the ocean and the sky. The open road still softly calls. Our little terraqueous globe is the madhouse of those hundred thousand millions of worlds. We who cannot even put our own planetary home in order, riven with rivalries and hatreds, are we to venture out into space? By the time we're ready to settle even the nearest other planetary systems, we will have changed. The simple passage of so many generations will have changed us. Necessity will have changed us. We're an adaptable species. It will not be we who reach Alpha Centauri and the other nearby stars. It will be a species very like us, but with more of our strengths and fewer of our weaknesses. More confident, far-seeing, capable, and prudent. For all our failings, despite our limitations and fallibilities, we humans are capable of greatness. What new wonders, undreamt of in our time, will we have wrought in another generation and another? How far will our nomadic species have wandered by the end of the next century and the next millennium? Our remote descendants, safely arrayed on many worlds through the solar system and beyond, will be unified by their common heritage, by their regard for their home planet, and by the knowledge that whatever other life may be, the only humans in all the universe come from Earth. They will gaze up and strain to find the blue dot in their skies. They will marvel at how vulnerable the repository of all our potential once was, how perilous our infancy, how humble our beginnings, how many rivers we had to cross before we found our way.
Abbot of Kells. You must get off.
Time, leave me be. Time, leave me be.
book was never meant to be hidden away behind walls. Locked away from the world which inspired its creation. Brendan, you must take the book to the people so that they may have hope. Let it light the way in these dark days of the North.
Shouldn't have. This is all I have left. It is the only comfort I have in this world. Brother Aiden was right. And I tried to stop him.
Aiden never paid you much heed, Uncle.
I suppose not.
Brother Aiden lived to see his work passed on and completed.
Best delights is not calling Thank you.
Dernier succès, tu sais même plus c'est quand. Le sort de chez toi pour un cachet conséquent. Oh que c'est Puccino, les gens pensent à groupuscule. Tout ça car le nom s'écrit en majuscule. Dès que tu poses le pied, le ring se casse. Massacre à la savonneuse pour style crado. Guitariste, vas-y frappe la gratte, on m'appelle là-bas. Martel la basse, mettez-la à la tâche, si et pas. Fada, bada, boum. Magique en otage, fais l'intifada, voilà vroom. Parle-moi, s'il y a rien à dire, on parloir. Plus passionnant que toi, trilogie Star Wars, pas de moi. On m'a dit, toi et ta sale clique, retournez en Afrique. Vous ne ferez pas de fric ici, trop de gens sont Tarzan. Pense que c'est volé, mais que le singe fait de l'argent. Non, sur mon bateau, je pars à la conquête, yo. Fume les épinards, Black Popeye. Et je délocre dans plus d'un hôtel. Et ce soir, on présente le rap qu'on paye, Black Popeye. Repart à la conquête, yo. Fume les épinards, Black Popeye. Et je délocre dans plus d'un hôtel. Et ce soir, on présente le rap qu'on paye. J'ai mangé trop d'olives et recraché les noyaux. Trop de vis, ça fait péter les boyaux. Tiens mon CD en petit paquet. Une rime remplie 10 sachets. Si le crime marche, ce que je dis t'achète. À 7h, je prends le mic comme on part en guerre. Dans la rue, j'écris sous les réverbères que c'est ici l'enfer. Au fond, j'en ai rien à faire, moi. Tu connais l'amour, repose en paix, yeah. Au lipopète, tu pars sans paix, yeah. À sec, pas de quoi rap. Les rap très typés, suréquipé, pédé son pipé, sûr j't'ai piqué, arrête de biper, t'as pas assez de batterie pour téléphoner, j'suis trop énervé, anti-RDV, chez moi, trop de défilés de stream, ce que je vis, trop long répété ou limite, non, sur mon bateau j'pars à la conquête, yo, fume les épinards, Black Popeye, yo, et je délocre dans plus d'un hôtel, et ce soir, on représente le rap qu'on paye, Black Popeye, repars à la conquête, yo. Fume les épinards, Black Popeye. Et je t'élancre dans plus d'un hôtel. Et ce soir, on représente le rap qu'on paye. J'ai le discours et les biscottos dans un seul steak. Averti, je vaux le double de ton espèce. Tu veux entrer au lipopète? Tes fadas est mal sapé comme pour aller en discothèque. T'es pas original comme le marin noir peut l'être. Contrôle du haut de mes presque 2 mètres. Ces enfoirés doivent manquer de sommeil pour oser squatter au Black Popeye. Sur mon bateau, je pars à la conquête, yo. Fume les épinards, Black Popeye. Et je délocre dans plus d'un hôtel. Et ce soir, on représente le rap qu'on paye, Black Popeye. Repart à la conquête, yo. Fume les épinards, Black Popeye. Et je délocre dans plus d'un hôtel. Et ce soir, on présente le rap Pompéi. Black Pompéi. Black
so brilliantly written by Babyface.
That was Beverly Knight talking about Whitney Houston, who died last night. The weather, there'll be more outbreaks of light rain and drizzle across the United Kingdom this afternoon. Studio production was by Nick Batley. The editor was Brooks Douglas. I'm Edward Sturton, and that is The World This Weekend.
In a minute, Alan Little concludes his series, which looks at the key moments and issues which brought the EU to the current crisis. That's after this.
Mr. Bond, you returned with all the tedious inevitability of an unloved season.
The Bond was...
My best impression... Yikes, school! And when I say best, I mean only...
The famous French mime Marcel Marceau. That was him trying to get out of a box.
I do a pretty good Mouth of Sauron from Return of the King. The halfling was dear to you.
This is me, Clive Anderson, saying goodnight, goodnight.
The home of radio comedy. BBC Radio 4.
We're quite funny.
In half an hour, how to perk up a droopy bouquet and warding off the white rot. Two questions answered in Gardener's Question Time at 2 o'clock. But now on Radio 4, the final part of Europe's Choice. Today, Alan Little looks at how the current crisis might affect the future of the European Union.
This is what the Greek government faces in their attempts to impose austerity on the Greek people. Another day of action, another general strike by public sector workers has brought the country to a standstill. Already several thousand demonstrators have gathered here near the National Museum for a march down to Constitution Square and the country's parliament. But this is not just a revolt by Greeks against their own government. It's also a revolt by Greece itself against Europe. Because the demonstrators here have the added argument that the Prime Minister they blame for imposing austerity was not chosen by Greeks themselves, but was chosen by other European powers, and principally Germany.
Germany is the one that's the locomotive of paying for other people's problems. They will probably ask to have a much bigger say in what's happening in Greece and Italy and Spain.
Peter Doukas is a former Greek budget minister. The EU was conceived, in part at least, as a way of addressing the problem of Germany's mighty weight in Europe. Integration was, its leaders thought, a way to normalise, to Europeanise Germany. Is this crisis in the Eurozone having the opposite effect of Germanising much of Europe?
Decisions will be made by those who actually pay for the biggest part of the bill. So the center of gravity of Europe is rapidly moving towards Berlin.
So do you think this kind of Germanization of Europe taking place?
Well, first of all, we had a customs union that benefited Germany because it could export its competitive products freely. And then you had the monetary union, and now you have a fiscal union. And in the fiscal union, they will be the ones dictating the terms with France as a junior partner.
European opinion is fragmenting. Half the continent now thinks Germany has grown too powerful. Greek television casually portrays a caricature Angela Merkel strutting around the Parthenon dressed as Hitler. But the other half thinks Germany is not aggressive enough and that German inaction is now an existential threat to the single currency. Is the euro bleeding to death because Germany will not allow the European Central Bank to intervene on the scale that's now urgently needed? France has always wanted a much more interventionist ECB. Ed Balls, the Shadow Chancellor, as an advisor to Gordon Brown, played a key role in keeping Britain out of the euro.
If you have a body on the floor bleeding, every hour of blood loss makes the patient weaker. There's not much point in the European Central Bank or certain leaders giving, you know, the kind of troubled patient a lecture about the fitness regime they should have had for the previous 10 years. And this massive doubt has been created about whether the commitment is real and 100%. And you can't make a monetary union work in those circumstances.
What are the main impediments to the ECB acting in the way that you believe it should act?
The ECB doesn't feel as though it has the political support of its major and most powerful shareholders, and therefore it is hamstrung and hampered from doing what is necessary.
To be clear, is it German reluctance to go down that road?
Well, it is very clear that that is what the French have wanted. But you have to reach a collective agreement, and it's not been possible because I don't think that Germany and others have been willing to sign up to that view of what needs to be done. But without that, you can't make this monetary union work.
Germany is in a position today where it is, like it or not, and the truth is it doesn't like it, in the driving seat of the European Union. Germany's never wanted to be in the driving seat. My memories of Germany in Brussels over 20 years or more is a country that was always utterly incompetent in punching its weight.
For no one is more spooked by the idea of German supremacy in Europe, by the historical resonance of that, than the Germans themselves. Quentin Peel of the Financial Times in Berlin is a veteran Europe watcher.
It goes back to the very federal German system. You have a devolution of power and a coalition system of government, which by definition means weak government. And Germans like weak government. It's not what they had in the 1930s, anything not to be back in the 30s. And I remember going to see the German ambassador in Brussels back in the 1980s. And I said, Ambassador, I really want to understand what your position is on reforming the common agricultural policy. And he said, Herr Peel, I would like to understand that too.
The European leaders who built the EU were driven by their experience of the most destructive war in human history. They wanted to answer Europe's German question. How do we stop it happening a third time? They succeeded. But there is a new, younger Germany now. This Germany resents the assumption that it'll be Europe's paymaster, endlessly picking up bills run up by feckless and ill-disciplined neighbours. The historian Timothy Garton-Ash.
The problem is that the consensus which was there 20 years ago, or even 10 years ago, for making this work by moving forward to closer union is no longer there in Germany, because Germany has become a more normal country, like France or Britain.
We see clearly in polling now today that many Germans are either disappointed from Europe or confused, or both.
Ulrike Gero of the European Council on Foreign Relations, based in Berlin.
You have a new generation of the, let's call it the 30-something people, who are now going into the ministries, going into the media, and they have just a different narrative. You have basically still a very pro-European Germany, but a Germany that puts a price tag behind Europe. I'm still from a generation without price tag, which is Europe at any price, any condition, good for us, glue of history. This is gone. Germany is still European, but with a price tag. What Europe at which price?
Almost everywhere, the crisis has provoked greater suspicion of the idea of Europe. A retreat to the nations, and not just in Greece and Germany. If I'd been making this programme even 5 years ago, I'd have gone to Turkey to consider where Europe ends geographically. Turkey first applied for membership 40 years ago. But does our common European home really stretch to the borders of Iran and Iraq, to the Euphrates Valley and the fringes of Babylon? The question seems dated now. Turkey is moving on. Sinan Ulgan is a former member of the Turkish delegation to the EU.
At the time, opinion polls were showing a support of almost 75%. Since 2004, what we have seen is a gradual but clear decline in domestic support for EU membership. Today, we have, according to, you know, to the opinion polls, we have about between 35 and 40% support for EU membership. So there's been a slide of almost 35 basis points.
The economic benefits of membership for Turkey are now in doubt. Over the last 10 years, Turkey's economy has grown by an average of 5% a year. Per capita income has tripled. It's now the world's 16th largest economy. In the Arab Spring, Turkey is seen as a political model to emulate, a successful fusion of Muslim and democratic sensibilities. Turkey is turning its back on a European future and forging links with a world familiar to previous generations of Turks, the Ottomans. Turkey is drawing closer to its old imperial territories.
Turkish policymakers don't like to use the term of neo-Ottomanism because it has imperial connotations. However, when you look at what's happening in practice, it is difficult to argue against that. When you look at where Turkey wants to grow its influence, it happens to coincide with the Ottoman geography. But obviously, another explanation is that really Turkey was able to take advantage of two trends in this geography. One is rising anti-Americanism after the war in Iraq. And two is really the lack of a true Arab leadership. And possibly a third one is still the continuing ineffectiveness of the EU as a foreign policy actor.
And so the shape of future Europe is shifting. In the beginning, Germany and France married their fortunes together. The European project was designed to protect German industry and French agriculture, and it served that purpose well. But that was when Germany was West Germany, with its little provincial capital at Bonn, close to the Belgian border. That Germany was easy for France to embrace.
Yeah, this is the craft shop for the mattresses, the high-temperature mattresses.
In a suburb of Berlin, the capital of a reunited Germany, Caroline Beck is the director of a family company founded by her great-grandfather in 1874. Today, they make heat insulation equipment for power plants, amongst other things. She's one of Germany's prodigious, prolific exporters.
I would say more than 70% of my business is foreign business now.
You don't just mean not German, you mean not German,
not
European?
Not European. South America, Asia, Russia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, Tajikistan, all the Stan countries.
Germany is the world's second largest exporter. Exports account for a third of the country's output, and most of its exports are sold inside the EU. So Germany is probably the biggest single beneficiary of the single market and currency. But Berlin is emphatically not West Germany. It is Prussia. It faces east, beyond Europe's borders. The Germany that France married in 1957 didn't include this, wasn't nearly so eastern.
Ukraine and Russia, because it's near. It's near to our mentality. Yeah, as a Berlin company, there was always a Moscow-Berlin relationship. Two-thirds of my stuff comes from Eastern Germany. And this is why we started in Russia. Because at that time, China was too far away.
So you felt naturally at home in a community composed
sort of
Russians, Ukrainians?
Yeah, sort of. I think I can understand the Russians better than I could probably understand the Chinese.
Or the French?
Much better than the French, definitely.
Why?
We are very close to the East here in Berlin. I'm sure that my grandparents came from, I don't know, Poland or Russia or somewhere around the area. I don't know, but I think so.
How important will Europe be in the future to your business plans?
Not important at all, sorry to say.
In the ashes of its lost war, Germany emerged to build Europe's strongest economy. It did it on the solid rocks of fiscal discipline and a sound currency. The Germans are not alone in believing that they are being punished for their own success and prudence. Finland suffered a devastating recession in the early 1990s. They did not riot, they did not strike, they did not take bailouts from Brussels. They took their self-prescribed austerity medicine and turned their fortunes around.
We are trying to go into the government. We will negotiate with the other parties who are coming into coalition what should be the future of the European Union.
In their recent general election, a nationalist party called the True Finns took 20% of the seats in Parliament. Their message was this: why should our currency be put at risk by the behaviour of nations who did not share our pain, who chose the easy spendthrift path? Sampo Terho is a True Finn member of the European Parliament. He says Finland made the mistake of joining the euro in a short-lived fit of naive optimism after the fall of the Soviet Union, when Finland, until then constrained by its Russian neighbour, was free at last to join the Western European mainstream.
Finland was in a sort of euphoric state.
Euphoric.
Yeah, that's right. It was sort of a great relief to finally go to the West and join everything we could. And for years and years, we were the yes men of EU, the nice guys who always wanted just to be in the core, no matter what the cost. Now, for the first time after the elections, we have started to use the word no in the EU circles, and that has caused some eyebrows to lift.
And what are you saying no to?
We are saying no to the federalism. We are saying no to giving up our independence, our sovereignty, to this, well, monster of a bureaucracy. As we all know, the Commission hasn't got a single member who is democratically elected. As we have now seen during this crisis, it is the Commission who is getting most of the powers that are now given to EU. And that is really worrying from our view. Of course, we appreciate the peace project and the things we can achieve economically and environmentally and all that cooperation that EU was made for originally. But we have went too far. We have went too far and too fast.
The European achievement has been remarkable. Europe has had 70 years not only of free trade and steadily rising standards of living, not only of peace, but of a peace in which war is now all but unimaginable. But public opinion has often followed the van of European integration reluctantly and at a distance. Now integration has run up against a powerful foe, a democratic backlash, a revolt of the nations, even in its Franco-German core. Timothy Garton-Ash.
There is self-evidently a popular revolt against the way the European project has developed. And politicians have neglected for far too long to make the case for this project to their own public opinion. It's not going to be made up by having a better European Parliament or directly elected European Commission president. I simply don't believe it. There is no united European public opinion. There are virtually no European media. We speak different languages. We live in different mental worlds. We're not suddenly going to feel, oh, that's all right, because we voted for John Smith as Commission President.
It was always a project devised by elites, starting with Jean Monnet, but which, with the exception perhaps of Britain and a bit one or two Scandinavian countries, did have popular support.
Sir Stephen Wall was a chief advisor on Europe to successive British governments and a renowned British European.
Here you have a group of 27 countries who, without some mechanism to unite them, A, would be very quarrelsome on trade and economic issues. That's the negative side of it. On the positive side of it, we are all democracies. We do have some shared values. And I think that in terms of trade policy and aid policy and its political stance generally, the European Union is a power for good in the world. Now, that doesn't deal with your fundamental question of how then do you get popular buy-in for it, except that I suppose you could argue that now, as in the past, if it actually delivers in terms of economic prosperity, then people will be less worried about the democratic deficit.
It's a bit like China.
Yeah, it's a little bit. Don't take that analogy too far, because it's not undemocratic. I mean, the decisions are being taken by ministers, all of whom are democratically elected. They are mandated by their parliaments.
Yes, but those democratically elected parliaments, how much power will they have in the Europe that emerges from this crisis? Almost certainly, national budgets in the Eurozone will in the future have to be submitted to Brussels for approval. Won't national populations start to say, wait a minute, this government we've elected, is it accountable down the way to us or upwards to Brussels, to an institution we haven't elected? The Finns are already saying it.
In the beginning of the 90s, we had a huge depression. We were almost in a similar shape than Greece or Portugal now. During that time, thank God, we still had our own currency. We devalued it and did a lot of savings. And in the end, we pulled through Europe.
You're one of the richest countries in Europe.
Yes, at the moment, yes.
But do you accept that if you're in a single currency, you have certain responsibilities to the people you share, the nations you share that currency with?
Now, that is the big question. how could they sell this idea to the Finnish people in the first place and to the peoples of Europe in the first place that we should join the euro? Part of the deal was that we do not have any sort of bailout policy. It was clearly said in the EU treaties. As we broke this fundamental rule, then we broke the original euro system.
The economic imperative is for more Europe, more fiscal discipline imposed by Brussels. There is a political backlash to this, a resistance by some of the nations, but not all.
Every time I come to Berlin, every time I see the Brandenburg Gate, I always remember the night in November in 1989 when I drove up here from Warsaw with an American journalist called Anne Applebaum. We actually arrived here in the east, then crossed Checkpoint Charlie to the other side.
Radoslav Sikorski was, in 1989, a young journalist working for the Sunday Telegraph. He's now Poland's foreign minister and one of the most interesting politicians on the continent. This is him speaking in Berlin.